No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. We don't have a guest today. It's just going to be me and Kathleen. And the reason that it's me and Kathleen and nobody else is because we've been busy preparing so that I can testify before the United States Senate tomorrow, the Committee on Homeland Security and Government Affairs, because they have our statehood bill, and we're going to have a hearing on it for the first time in 20 years. Isn't that exciting?
It's really exciting, and, you know, it's amazing when you have the president backing an effort, or, you know, basically he's backing this effort to make sure that D.C. citizens are represented, and that's to make it a state. So, you know, I think that it was a great thing that he did, and that helped push the momentum so that when the Senate came back after the summer recess, they right away, in fact, last Monday, said that they were going to have a hearing. So it is really exciting, and everyone's really excited in the city.
So what are you saying? It wasn't my charming personality, but it was rather the president of the United States. Yeah.
Well, you come in second.
Well, thanks. You know? I don't mind
You're
coming
welcome.
Second to the president. And you know what? It really is amazing. He did. He stood up at and it was so unexpected by us because we were pushing for this thing. And, you know, he's always been in favor of helping us. I met with him briefly at American University one time. And he said to me, if you get a statehood bill on my desk, I'll sign it. So he's always been a supporter of ours. But to come out and make a statement the way he did, which is basically that he said, I'm for it. He said, I live in the District of Columbia. I'm for it. These people pay taxes and fight in wars, do everything we do, and they should be treated. And by everything we do, he meant the people of the 50 states, and they should be treated just like any other state. And that started the ball rolling. I think we had 91 co-sponsors at that point, even less. We've gotten, I think, about 35 co-sponsors in the last few days since he mentioned that, and we've gotten another co-sponsor in the Senate. So, you know, usually we thank all the co-sponsors, and we will on our next show, but there's just been so many of them that we haven't had time to put the list together. But if they're out there listening or any member of their staffs, please understand how important this is to us and accept our thanks. And we'd like to thank our old dear friend, Carl Levin, who is the Democratic senator from the state of Michigan. Carl Levin has been involved in, you know, helping the district many, many times, and he's a good friend, and he's the new co-signer in the Senate. So thank you, Senator Levin. We appreciate your help.
I would like to say that anyone listening out there, it's pretty much a safe bet that if your representative is Republican, they haven't signed on to this bill. So we ask that also you call your senators and your House of Representatives from your state and ask them to please sign. I think when most people are surveyed, right? Didn't you guys do a survey of the Americans throughout the United States?
Yes, we did. I mean, there was a local public interest group called DC Vote, which about 10 years ago did a survey, and they asked people if they believed that the people of the District of Columbia should be treated like all other Americans. And the answer to that question was an emphatic yes. Approximately 80% of the people that were surveyed said yes. The sad thing, and one of the reasons that we started this show, was that approximately 80% of them said that they thought we were treated like everybody else. I mean, why wouldn't you think that the people that live in the nation's capital of the world's greatest democracy would not be treated exactly the same way that everybody else is? We're the only country that does this. So that was really the bad news for us, was that we needed to get the word out, because most people don't know about this. And it's one of the reasons we started the show. But almost everybody believes that we should be like every other state. I mean, why?
Well, I don't think they understand that in D.C. there's a very high rate of patriotism. In other words, you have a very high rate of people who go and join the military to protect us. And these people go to war knowing that they have a good chance of not coming back. Yet, if they do survive and they do come back, guess what? What year was it that they finally could vote for the president?
1961. The first president that we got to vote for, we had to amend the Constitution. And the 23rd Amendment of the Constitution says that we can vote for president. But it also limits our vote. We're the only people, even that is limited. We're the only people that have a limit on our
ability to vote.
Yeah, our ability to vote for president. And that is that we can be no larger, we can have no more votes than the smallest state. So we have three electoral votes, because that's what the smallest states have. The amount of electoral votes you get is based on the number of congressmen and senators you have. So the minimum number of congressmen and senators you can have is three, right? You have two senators. Right. And if you're not large enough, because the Congress is decided by population, you have one congressman. So in people might say, well, what difference does that make? Well, it makes a lot of difference. At one time, the population of the District of Columbia was approximately 850,000 people, and we should have had two congressmen in those days, or two representatives. I'm sorry, Delegate Norton. I keep on using the word man at the end of that, and I don't mean to be sexist, but we should have had two representatives. So we should have had four electoral votes, and we didn't. We had three. Right now, with our population, we would only be entitled to three, but that can always change. It's growing. It's growing every day. So
to me, this is a very important point that I think that a lot of the people in the cause for statehood don't express. I mean, we can just go on about, having a God-given gift to be able to be equal and all that stuff. But think of it this way, listeners. Can you imagine going into a World War II and so many lost their lives, and knowing that you at that point in time couldn't vote for a president, couldn't vote for a senator, and couldn't vote for a representative. So you were giving your life. Am I wrong or am I correct?
No, that's absolutely right. And the thing about World War II, it's funny you bring up World War II, because then we didn't even have a mayor, right? We didn't even have a mayor. We didn't have any kind of government. In fact, the first time we had a mayor, it wasn't the first time, but modern home rule in the District of Columbia only goes back 40 years. So you could have fought in the war and come back and not had any kind of representation at all. And in fact, one of the first things I did when I took this office was we had a senator from Massachusetts who had been a long time senator from Massachusetts, and he was a native Washingtonian. His name was Ed Brooke. And when Ed Brooke was in the Senate, he was the leader of the legislation to pass a constitutional amendment to get us a vote. So he came to town, and we gave him the keys to the city. We had a legislation on the Hill, and we gave him the keys to the city, and he went up on Capitol Hill and discussed the legislation that was pending in those days. It was called the D.C. Voting Rights Act. But he said to us the reason that he moved to Massachusetts and ran for the Senate, finally got elected, ran for a bunch of offices, was that he came back to Washington after the war, after serving in a segregated black unit, and he wanted to run for office because he felt compelled to do it, and there was nothing to run for. Nothing, just school board. So he said, I have to leave my home and go find a place where I can be involved in politics. So those people were very brave, and they stood up for their country, knowing that when they came back, they were going to be treated like second-class citizens. And I'll tell you what, it's one of the reasons that I'm honored to represent these people, because that's the kind of people Washingtonians are. I know we get a bad rap because of politicians and the IRS and other people, government agencies in the District of Columbia that people don't like. But let me tell you something. The people that live in the District of Columbia, the people that work in the District of Columbia, are some of the finest people in the world.
And let me say this, too, and put it in perspectives, in world perspectives. My ex was from Croatia. You know, Croatians couldn't vote because the Tito ran the country, right? And I kind of look at D.C. citizens in the same situation. Any other country, you know, you get a revolution because people want to be able to vote for who represents them. And to think that here in the United States, that the one, your nation's capital, where politics is really forefront, the industry, that people can't vote for the representatives. I mean, it's a very serious issue. And I fail to understand why people don't want to have statehood. I mean, I tend to think that they may be here working and they like to vote in their own state, or they just don't really care. But can you explain to me the difference? Because I'm not sure I understand the historical difference between the Voting Rights Act and budget autonomy or authority and then statehood. So can you tell me what the difference is between
First of all, it's funny that you say the thing about people in other countries having a revolution, because we had a revolution here. We forget that a lot, you know, because it was 230 years ago. But we did the same thing because of what they do to us in D.C., right? They tax us, but they don't allow us to be represented. And that's what the American Revolution started over. And our license plates in the district say taxation without representation. I think the reason that so many people are not, you know, don't really come out for our rallies and get involved in District of Columbia is they don't understand how important it is. They can't connect the dots, because as Americans, we get a lot in this city. But the truth is, we don't get what we deserve. And that's what that's what your question is really all about. Because budget autonomy, we don't, you know, in the District of Columbia, the what we call the District Clause of the Constitution says that Congress shall have exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over a district not to exceed 10 miles square, which shall, by the secession of particular states and the acceptance by Congress, become the capital of the United States. And what that means is that Congress can pretty much do whatever it wants in the District of Columbia. And what Congress wanted to do in 1801, they passed an Organic Act, and they wanted to take over the district, and that's pretty much what they did. So, and they've changed the government, the form of government, many times. We used to have commissioners appointed by the president. Now we have a mayor. For some time, we didn't have anything. In the 80s, we had a control board, which amounted to martial law. But we don't have control over our own budget. Every time we pass a budget, we have to send it up to Capitol Hill, and they have to approve it. And then the president of the United States has to approve it. So budget autonomy is about getting control of our budget. But the truth of the matter is that that's all it does for us. We still don't have control over our legal system, and we don't have senators or representatives who can vote. So budget autonomy does only that. It would get us control over our budget. And in a special election, we passed a referendum to have budget autonomy. But since the Constitution is pretty clear, exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever, the Attorney General in the District of Columbia said that it violated the Home Rule Charter and we couldn't do it. So we haven't even implemented it. So that's just one thing. That's budget autonomy. Voting rights is something that was come up with in 2006, I think, is the first time they came up with the idea. And a congressman named Tom Davis from Virginia came up with the idea that one of the problems that we had, as you pointed out at the beginning of the show, Kathleen, there are no Republicans on our bill, and that's always been a problem for us, the partisanship. So he came up with this idea based on the Missouri Compromise. And for those of you that don't remember your history books, the Missouri Compromise was during the Civil War. It said that slave states and free states had to enter the Union together. So he found out, actually this was pretty creative, he found out that Utah had just missed getting a congressman and that they had gone in the last census, as you know, that they redraw the amount of congressmen that each state gets based on population. And in the last census, Utah just missed getting one, and they went to court to sue because missionaries from the Mormon Church were not counted as part of their population, whereas people that serve in the military are. So they said that was unfair, and they actually had enough people to get another representative, and they didn't get one. So they are almost exclusively Republican. And the district is almost exclusively Democrat. So Tom Davis tried to put both of them together and pass a law that said the district would get a vote for our delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton, and Utah would get an additional representative to balance things out. But again, that only gives you a representative. It gives you a representative a vote in the House. It doesn't give you senators. It doesn't give you control over your budget. It doesn't give you control over your legal system. The only thing that does all this is statehood.
Right.
So that's the difference. And that's why statehood is so important to us.
You know, and I know for our audience out there, we always should repeat the phone number. And, of course, I don't have it right at me. But, Michael, do you have it? You can Skype us, BBS Radio 1.
Look, you don't get to be a United States Senator, lady, without being on the ball.
That's right.
888-627-6008, okay? And if you have a question or you have a job for Kathleen, she's looking for a job, or you want to send me money, please call in. Because all those things are, you know, we're anxious to get all those things to happen. Statehood also, just so you know, it's the easiest course of action. I mean, there are a lot of people out there that say, well, you can amend the Constitution. Well, the Constitution, first of all, has only been amended really 17 times since the beginning of the country, because the first 10 amendments, the Bill of Rights, were pretty much an addendum to the Constitution. They were like things we forgot. So since then, since the Constitution has been in existence, and since for the past 200 years, we've only had 17 constitutional amendments, but we've had 37 new states. So it's twice as easy to become a state as it is to amend the Constitution. That's the first thing. And number two, anything that's been amended can be unamended. We all know that there was a constitutional amendment prohibiting the use of alcohol, prohibition, and then there was another amendment that overturned prohibition. So if you give us equal rights through a constitutional amendment, that could be overturned. But nobody has ever destated anyone. Right. There was a state made out of another state, but nobody has ever had their state's rights taken away from them once they've been given. So statehood is the permanent solution for us.
That's right. And I mean, I guess it's just hard to believe that you all, anybody living in D.C. or was born here, can't vote. Only they can vote, but only for a president. And, you know, that's really, really unfair. And it's hard to believe that that exists in the United States. It really is. And I just think, and the other thing I like to bring up, because I hear this a lot, well, why do I want to put two Dems in the Senate and another one in the House? And I just would like those people to tell me where in the Constitution it says that you can prohibit somebody from voting based on their party affiliation. I've really looked and I haven't found anything. I mean, love to have somebody call in and tell me where that is okay.
Well,
where
you
that's
know,
stated that that's a good for the good of the nation.
And you know, the first people I take the vote away from are the people of some conservative state, Utah, Arizona, someplace like that, if they let you do that. But you're right. You can't do it. And I'm only kidding. You should not be able to do it. And it's always been an argument. And the funny thing is that it was an argument against Alaska and also against Hawaii. But they said that Alaska would never elect a Republican and Hawaii would never elect a Democrat. And it's just so funny because there's only one Democrat in Alaska, and that's Senator Mark Begich. And I think he's the first, before he got elected, there were two Republican senators in Alaska. Now there's only one. But it had been a long time since Alaska had elected a Democrat. And you could say the same thing about Hawaii. Most of the, I don't know if all the representatives have been Democrats, but certainly the senators, I've known both of them, and they've been Democrats for many, many years. So what people thought was going to happen didn't happen. And the same thing would happen in District of Columbia over time. Certainly wouldn't happen overnight. I'm sure that the first two were so solidly Democratic. 75% of the registered voters in the district are Democrats. So I'm sure that after the, for the first election, we would have two Democrats, but that would change over time. And more Republicans would be encouraged to run.
Well, I also think that you might say that there are 75% registered Democrats, but think of all the people I've met in this town that don't call this their home. They are from other states, and so there's no reason for them to register here. I mean, what's interesting is that a lot of people live in D.C. and vote in their home states,
right?
Which is allowed, correct?
No, it's illegal.
Oh, it is illegal.
But they do it anyway. Oh, yeah.
No.
Because you can always absentee vote, you know. You're
right.
Not supposed to. If you've lived here, I think, more than 60 or 90 days, you're not a temporary there are exceptions. You know, if you're in the military, you can always vote in your home state, no matter where you go, because you're on, you're stationed in different places. But, no, you're not supposed to. But people do, because they realize they don't have a vote here.
Right.
there may be an exemption if you're a college student or something. I don't know.
And
or
I
if you have
a
permanent
Senate,
home. Yeah, if you have a permanent home somewhere. Well, that was always my joke, you know. What do you call a man in Washington who has a guy in Washington who has all his rights? Congressman. Congressman. Because, you know, they get to vote at home. They get all the rights. But, yeah, you shouldn't be allowed to do it. It's illegal. But this you can do, which is amazing. You can move to Europe. You can move to, Rome or Paris or London or any place else. And if you're from Michigan, you can vote the rest of your life by absentee ballot in Michigan. And there's only two ways you can lose that right. Do you know what they are?
No, what? Death?
You have to, well, if you're a Chicago voter, no, death doesn't count. But you can renounce your American citizenship, or you can move to the District of Columbia. I mean, isn't that
right.
Amazing?
It's amazing, right?
Right. You can join the Communist Party or you can move to the District of Columbia. And it's crazy because, as you pointed out in the beginning, how many people, over 200,000 people, have served during wartime in the District of Columbia, even knowing that the rights they have are limited. You know, it didn't matter to them. They went and served their country anyway. So
to really protect all of our rights, to be able for us to be able to vote and to have freedom of speech. And even given that, they gave up their life knowing they could never receive that kind of right.
That's
also.
Right. That's right. That's absolutely right. So,
Well, I'd like to, I guess we're going to go for break. And then what I'd like to do is when we come back, tell them about actually what you're going to do tomorrow. A special kind of occasion, and go into all the historical anniversaries that are going to be occurring or have been occurring in the past couple of days.
Okay, great. So we're going to take a little break, think of some brilliant question, and call us. We'll be back in a minute.
And here it is, Marvin Gaye, singing our national anthem, a Washingtonian.
A Washingtonian. We love him.
Can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleam?
And we're back.
And that was emotional for me.
Yeah,
it was emotional because, you know what? Think of it. This was, I think, in what, 1983 or something? This was mm-hmm. when he sang the national anthem at I think it was the finals of the NBA. And knowing with that kind of emotion that you don't get to vote.
Right.
Because he was if he lived, you know, he was born in Washington. So I don't know if he was living there at that time. But basically, if he wanted to stay true to where he was born, you know, you're singing a song that you believe in, but guess what? You don't get to vote.
Well, you know, that's so true. And I don't know if he was living here at the time, but his family always lived here. And he was brought up in a really rough part of town. There's a park named for him now in Northeast Washington in the neighborhood he was brought up in. We're very proud of Marvin Gaye and a lot of important, famous people that come from the city. You know, it's funny that you said that earlier about the people in the district doing politics. This is what we do. And it's true. It's what we do. And I often say, and our friend Johnny Barnes laughs every time I say this, but telling the people of D.C. they can't vote is like telling the people of Detroit they can't drive. It's just crazy. It doesn't make any sense. So when you think that we're trying to, when you consider what you and I are trying to do, Kathleen, have a national conversation about issues, to close people out of that conversation who are so important to the political process to begin with, to me, is just crazy. You're closing out people who really have quite an expertise in doing these things. And I know that there are people out there in America saying, oh, we hate the people in Washington. Believe me, if you're saying that, you don't know the people in Washington, because most of us actually don't work for the government. We actually work for the betterment of everybody. We work for groups like A, and I don't care what you consider the betterment of people, but we work for AARP and the National Organization of Women and the National Rifle Association.
That's right.
And the NAACP and the ACLU, but also, the Cato Institute. And, what are some of the other
conservative think tanks?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The Heritage Foundation. That's and, right. You know, the other conservative.
And the Association for Yard Sales. I mean, there's an association for everything. For
yard sales? Yeah. You know, my first job, not to digress here, but my first job was in a building, and we were next door to the Candy Manufacturer and Nut Salters Association. And you laugh, but they were so small, the Candy Manufacturers and Nut Salters Association, that in those days, this is a long time ago, they didn't have a high capacity Xerox machine. So what would happen is they had a little Xerox machine, but if they had to do thousands of copies, they would ask if it was okay to use our Xerox machine, and then they would pay us for the copies. But every time we let them do it, they would bring us a box of these little candy bars that were made in Ohio somewhere. I can't even remember the name of the candy company, and still wrapped in wax paper. And they were so good. They were so unbelievably like fresh almonds and walnuts and all stuff. They were so amazing that we used to go over, because we're in our 20s. You know, you're always looking for food.
Oh, we have, excuse me, sir, but we have Michael Gomez on line one.
Oh, Mayor Gomez, how are you?
Great. Talking about how you can vote and where you reside, come to Cochise County. If you register in Douglas, you can leave anywhere in the United States, anywhere in the world, and still vote in Douglas elections.
All right. Well, we'll come to Douglas and stuff the ballot box for you. But you need to run for mayor.
Exactly. People register here in Douglas, and they keep the registration in Phoenix, Tucson, California, New Mexico, and they still vote for local politics.
And you still manage to get elected. Because enough good people wanted to vote for you.
That's a good point.
But anyway, I just want to let you know that you say you can live in Europe. Yes, you can live in Europe and still vote in Cochise. The registrar's office here says that as long as you're registered here, you can vote in Cochise County.
Well, I'm sending in tomorrow for my absentee ballot. And I'm going to write in Mike Gomez for mayor.
I thought I'd let you know, you were talking about residency and how you can vote in other places. Well, in Cochise County, you can vote. If you're registered here and you're still registered and you haven't lost your registration, you can vote anywhere in the world.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Gomez. We appreciate hearing from you.
You bet.
All right. Bye. We'll talk to you again soon. We've got Bonnie from D.C. on line two. Let's hear what Bonnie
says. Hi there.
Are you there, Hi. Bonnie?
I'm here.
What's your question or comment?
Well, it's not really a question. It's sort of a tidbit from history. And then I'm going to ask the question, okay?
Okay, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, you know, a lot of our laws came from the Magna Carta.
Uh-huh.
And when Queen Elizabeth I died in 1603, the next king was from Scotland. He was James VI of Scotland, James I of England. And 100 years later, England decided to incorporate Scotland into the United Kingdom. And surprisingly enough, tomorrow or Tuesday, Scotland is voting to leave the United Kingdom because they want to be autonomous.
Wow, I didn't
and
know
so,
that.
And so, I mean, it's sort of the... Pardon me?
I didn't know that.
Yes, I mean, they've been trying to be their own country for years. They got their parliament maybe 10 or 15 years ago. But they've always had to just... They've never had a prime minister. They've never had the rights that would be accorded to another country. And they are going to vote this week to get autonomy and become their own country. Now, of course, the United Kingdom doesn't want them to do that, but, and I'm not sure that I want them to, but it's sort of the reverse of what we're looking for. This is a native country that has not been able to vote for themselves for 400 years. They've had to live within the rule of somebody else. So it's a bit reverse of what we're looking for. We have been part of a country for 400 years, and we don't have any rights.
Well, let me ask you, first of all, because I've seen the movie Braveheart, and I'm working for the same thing that he was working for. Does that mean I'm the Mel Gibson of Washington?
Well, only
yes,
if you,
you
bend
are.
Over and put your skirt up.
Only if I put my skirt up.
I just don't want you to be drawn and quartered.
Well, they'll, you know, if I put my skirt up, they'll definitely take the vote away. But
I guess my question is it, you know, my question is that Washington, D.C. is historically Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that a lot of the people that you have on the bill and stuff and the vote that you have going on tomorrow, or the at least the hearing for tomorrow, is going to try to get statehood for us. But how in the hell are we going to get Republicans to agree?
I don't know in a strictly, I mean, that's a great question. And I don't know in a strictly political sense. One of the things that I think we have to do, you know, I often say that I believe that this is an injustice that can't stand on its own two feet. One thing I think we need to do is we need to put some money into our battle, and we need to get outside of the district, because in the district, these guys can do what they want to us. But I bet if we go to Ohio and we stand up there in front of an Ohio congressman who's a Republican, and we say to his constituents, you know what? There are 30,000 Washington citizens who have been deployed to Afghanistan and Iraq, and this man doesn't want them to be treated equally. This man wants them to be treated like second or third class citizens. I bet that people would be offended by that. You know, I'm not so sure people care about the fact that we pay the highest per capita taxes in America, but I bet Americans, I've never known an American that didn't respect the people in uniform that stand up for us around the world. And I think if we get the message out that, look, we had 39 Congressional Medal of Honor winners from the District of Columbia. These guys, the few of them, men and women that came home, because the medal is often, as you probably know, given posthumously, but the ones that returned were then treated like second and third class citizens.
I think the other way to also, you know, I'm always about making the common denominator very simple. If you are a senator or a representative, think about...
We seem to have lost our guest and also Kathleen, but I'm going to ramble on here for a few minutes until we try to get Kathleen back, and maybe we'll get some other callers. I'm sorry, I don't know what the technical glitch was, but we had something happen. Now, what we were going to discuss, and I will go on with this, is that tomorrow there's going to be a hearing before the Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee of our bill, S-132. And it will be the first time in more than two decades that we've had a hearing on a statehood bill in the District of Columbia. So we're very, very excited about this. And I'm going to get to testify on the bill, and that's also very exciting for me. I've never gotten to do that because we've never had a bill like this with a hearing before the United States Senate. So this is a somewhat amazing thing for us to do. And the reason that it's important is because it's the next step in moving the bill. We have to have a hearing before we have a vote. So we're gonna move the bill tomorrow, and that's gonna be that's a really big thing for us. 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon in the Dirksen Building, we'll be discussing the new Columbia Admission Act, which would make us the 51st state. I hear that we have Bonnie back. Are you back with us, Bonnie?
I am back with you. And what happened? The radio station went dead, and they started playing a stupid song.
What stupid song?
I something that was saying nen. I don't know. I have no idea what it was.
It's those Republicans. Our signal.
I think it was Republicans that did it.
Yeah, I bet it was. You know, they hate the fact that we're out there making America. But I'm only kidding. We there are Republicans that we like. We just don't know any of them off the top of our head.
And so yeah, I didn't really get all of your
that.
Comments,
we
and I really appreciate what.
We can't even get Kathleen
back. I know. I just
back.
Really appreciate what you had to say.
Is. She went out to have a margarita or something after all that happened. So I'm sorry. Where were we? We were talking about, you know, how we get Republicans on the bill. I mean, I don't know other than to say, you know, this is the right thing to do. This is democracy. This is what America is about. You know, I often wish that Rosa Parks was still around so that I could ask her if she knew that there was going to be a, you know, that her not giving the seat up on the bus would be a seminal moment in, you know, the civil rights movement. Because I think maybe we'll have a seminal moment as well, but I don't know what it'll be.
You know, it's really interesting because I think that what you might find is that people are going to take, like, the Second Amendment and gun rights and all that crap when they haven't read the whole thing, and then go back to the Constitution and say that, well, Washington, D.C. wasn't ever supposed to be a city or a state or whatever.
I'm sorry.
Go
as
ahead.
Far as that stuff goes, women were never supposed to vote. African Americans weren't supposed to vote. We got rid of all that stuff, and it's time to get rid of this.
And I'm back.
Oh, she's back. Well, I got to let you go, Bonnie, because we got another caller.
Okay.
Thanks for
calling
in.
Bye.
We'll talk to you again soon.
And
I hope we've got Rachel on line 2 from the District of Columbia. Rachel, are you there?
I sure am. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm excellent. I had a couple questions for you guys. The first was kind of bouncing off of the previous caller's question. But I might be mistaken, but I thought the Republicans were, you know, not completely opposed to Puerto Rico getting statehood. And do you think that a D.C. and Puerto Rico combined bid for statehood might possibly further the movement a little bit?
That's a great question, Rachel, and you're right about it, that the Republicans have supported the Puerto Rico movement for statehood, and there are many people that feel that if we could partner with Puerto Rico, that we could, you know, that would help us and help Puerto Rico. That hasn't happened yet. We certainly talked to them. They have a resident commissioner who's functions like our delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton. So that's a viable option, and we keep the door open, and we hope to get them involved. And I've got to tell you, the thing I said earlier about having money, that's very important. The Puerto Ricans spend $20 million on trying to become a state, and the District of Columbia spends almost nothing. And it's true that I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that was important. And I just was wondering why I got cut off. Did you mention, about the flags, about the 51 flags and that, you know, what?
No, I haven't yet.
Okay. Because you don't have so much time.
That next. Okay, well, we've got 12 minutes, and we've got Rachel. Okay. And do you have another question, Rachel?
I did. I was also wondering, what do you think that this hearing could possibly do for the future of the statehood movement for D.C.?
Well, it's a big deal because I think it can do two things. First of all, it's a necessary step in moving the bill to a vote. So that's one big thing right there. And another thing is that it can do very much what the president came out and did. You know, it can publicize the bill. It can get it out there so people start thinking about it and talking about it. We're going to get a lot of press stories from it. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to be on the news at 7:30 in the morning. So those are the two things, that it can make it a bigger deal and get more people involved and have them look at the bill. And then it also is a necessary step in getting a vote. And you know, even though it's going to be hard to get it through the House with all those Republicans, we're still in control of the Senate right now, and it would be great to get it passed in the Senate. So thanks for calling in, Rachel, and we hope you'll call in again. We talk to you soon.
Excellent, definitely.
Thanks. So, Kathleen, you want to talk a little bit about what we're going to do tomorrow?
Well, I think, why don't you set the stage for why this is an important action?
Well, let me tell you, tomorrow is one of the reasons we played Marvin Gaye in the National Anthem, is tomorrow is the 200th anniversary of the writing of the poem that became our national anthem. And as you probably know, it was written by a man named Francis Scott Key, and he was a lieutenant in the Washington Militia, which then became the National Guard. So he was a D.C. soldier, and he wrote our national anthem. And in addition to that, another guy named General Daniel Butterfield, who was a Congressional Medal of Honor winner during the Civil War, wrote the melody for Taps, which, of course, is a song we play at sunset on military bases and over our fallen heroes. So what happens is every time the flag goes up and every time the flag comes down, there's a Washingtonian involved. They're involved in singing, you know, when we sing the national anthem or when we play Taps. But what's ironic about all this is that the rest of us are not involved in Washington. We don't have a star on that flag. So what we're going to do tomorrow is we're going to go to all the members of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security that is going to hear our bill, and we're going to give them a 51-star flag because we want them to understand that the flag's been changed 27 times and that we have a special connection to the flag and that it's time to change it again. So it's in commemoration of this one of our Washington heroes, and it's also in commemoration of this hearing that we hope will be the start of getting our star on the flag, and we're going to do it with a group of citizens and also with a group of veterans. And if you read the Washington Post today, you'll see that I have an article in there explaining it.
And exactly, you actually have it in the Metro section, correct?
Yeah, it's in the
Washington Post.
Yep.
And I think that this is, you know, this is really an important step that the statehood is taking. And I think you've done a great job in trying to tie it. You know, a lot of times people talk about issues, but when you tie it to actual people and make it maybe more human, I think you can relate to it. So, you know, it's amazing that Francis Scott Key was in the D.C. National Guard, and General Butterfield. I mean, it just shows you the caliber of people who live in D.C.
Yeah, it really does. Well, they're amazing people that live in this city, and I'm proud to represent them. And tomorrow, we hope that you know, will be the start of the next step in our process of getting you, getting the people of the District of Columbia represented from through statehood. And, you know, if you, Kathleen mentioned earlier calling your congressmen and senators, and the number is 202-224-3121. And just so you know who they are on the Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee, I'm going to quickly read off a list of the people you can call. And if anybody in any of these states who's listening wants to call in, please call that number, 202-224-2131. And we'll start. Senator Carper is the chairman and supports the bill. But the ranking member, Republican, is Oklahoma Senator Tom Coburn. Also, John McCain of Arizona, Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, Rand Paul of Kentucky, Rob Portman of Ohio, Mike Enzi of Wyoming, and Kelly Ayotte. I think Ayotte is the way you pronounce her last name, A-Y-O-T-T-E, of New Hampshire. And they're the Republicans. And if you're from one of those states, please call them. And also, people who are not on the bill, on the Democratic side on that committee, are Heidi Heitkamp of Dakota, Tammy Baldwin. North Dakota. Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin, Mark Begich of Alaska, John Tester of Montana, Mary Landrieu of Louisiana, Clara McCaskill of Missouri, Mark Pryor of Arkansas. There's also, as we started out the show, Carl Levin of Michigan, but he is a co-sponsor, and we thank him very much. So if any of those senators that I just read off to you are in your state, please give them a call. Or even if they're not in your state, call them and say, support this legislation. It's important. Again, the number is 202-224-3121. And just ask for your senator, tell them what state you're from, and they'll put you through.
I'd also like to make a suggestion in that I think that now that we are going through elections, I think it's very important that people call those who are on the city council and those who may be running to find out if they support statehood. Because I think, as you mentioned before, Puerto Rico spends $20 million to lobby for this, for their rights, and basically, yes, you know, D.C. does, the city council does not fund the shadow senators, which, you know, is like basically your delegation of 3-2 senators and a rep. And I think that that's very important. I mean, you can't expect the rest of the country to support your issue if you don't have your elected politicians supporting it also.
Well, that's absolutely true. And although several members of the council do support us, the chairman, Phil Mendelson, has refused to move the bill to date. So call Phil, say move the bill. Move the bill, Phil. It even rhymes. And, you know, because it's important. If they would fund us, then we could get more done. We really could.
And we would capitalize on this movement. Because when you get a movement like this, you can't really, once you got it going, you got to keep the engine running. You know, you can't just let it stop and stall. And, you know, when the president says he's for something, that, and it's, it is a basic issue of, you know, you're getting your, the civil rights of the people who live in D.C. are being violated by not being able to vote. And that's something we just should not allow anymore in the United States.
Well, folks, we're out of time. So let me just say thank you for tuning in. We'll talk to you again next week. Hopefully I'll have some good news to report. Like I gave such a moving speech that the Congress got together and decided to give us statehood. That's my hope, and that's what I'm going to try to do. And thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks for calling in, Bonnie and Rachel, and Lynn, who called in and unfortunately got cut off in that segment where we lost contact for a while. We're sorry, Lynn. We hope you call back.
And thank you to all those people out there who listen and who support us, even if you don't live in Washington, D.C.
Right.
We've heard from you, and we really, really appreciate your support. Keep on listening, and we thank all of you who do.
Give the people their right to vote.